y'all. Welcome to Beautifully Healthy. I am Dr. Allison Key, of course, joined by my esteemed colleague, Erica Smith.
Hello.
We're excited to have an old friend, Nick White, on today. I was trying to discuss before you got here how much older I am than you.
Not very much. And if you looked at us, I would be the older one, I would say.
Aren't you kind? Yeah. Well, I just had a birthday this week, so
congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Yeah. Class of 01, actually.
Oh. Yeah. I thought I was older than you.
Yeah.
You're getting old too, brother.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Birthdays are coming. And they're not as eventful as they used to be. You know, my kids get excited. My high school kids get excited. Coach White, my birthday's next month. I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure how old I'm turning next year. So.
Yeah, but try not to think about that so much anymore.
Yeah, I know.
No, it's good. It's a good thing. I'm in the prime of my life.
That's right. 100%.
Exactly right.
We're not aging. We're done.
Yeah, for real.
I told you.
Well, tell us about you.
Yeah, so currently I am the co-head wrestling coach at Carrollton High School. Been there. This is my third year there. I teach U.S. history there. I am the FCA sponsor there. Awesome. And so that's my profession. That's my day-to-day. That's how I make tents and move things down the road. But also a member of Victory Fellowship Church. I've been on the praise and worship team there for a little while. Preach about 15 to 20 Sundays a year there. And then I also now have added to all that working with the Graddick sports team during football season, because I've recently, as I got to Carrollton, stopped coaching football on Friday nights. And so obviously with all of my free time that I had, I needed to fill it with something else. So that's kind of my day-to-day operation. Married. This is year number 20. And yeah, I know it's been a long time. Year number 20, two kids, Judah and Ella. My wife's name is Jamie, and full life. But that's a little bit of my day-to-day. That's what
living
I
get
the into.
Dream.
My wife reminds me daily that I have the best job and best life in the world. So sometimes it feels like it's not true, and I feel like it's a stab at me and my attitude. But yeah, I really am. I really do have the best job in the world. Now, I mean, we are in our prime right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Wouldn't trade it for being 17, for sure.
For sure. I just had this conversation with my husband.
Yeah.
You could not pay me to go back to high school at this point in my life.
No.
College, maybe for a few weeks, but
right.
But I'm good. It's a good place to be. So have you always coached wrestling?
Yes. So as a matter of fact, I started coaching wrestling when I was 18. I had graduated high school, had worked on getting into the college thing, and my girlfriend, which became my wife, later on down the road, said, you know, you wrestled for a long time. You've played football for a long time. You're just kind of done with all that stuff. And I just felt, I almost felt like as soon as she said that, like just something in my heart leapt, and started volunteering time at a local high school. I actually got started at Mount Zion 20 years ago. This is my 20th year in athletics at the high school level, and got started there. And I felt like that was a community that I could pour into that needed some things, and I had some great times there. Cut my teeth there. But yeah, I've coached wrestling now for 20 years.
And y'all have a girls wrestling team now.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, obviously doing that for 20 years and then wrestling, it was very uncommon 25 years ago. It happened. You saw female wrestlers, but
there's one.
Yes, we went to
when
school,
we were in school, yeah.
With one and very few and far between. Even as a coach, it made you feel weird. Or if I'm being honest with you,
yeah.
You know, early on in my coaching career, when we'd have a girl come out for the sport, like I almost would feel like I needed to have that daddy talk and say, listen, there's some compromising situations that you may be in,
yeah.
And there's not much that we can do about that. And obviously more and more girls wanted to join the sport, and it's kind of taken off. And so this is our third year at Carrollton having a female team, and we have a full female program. Had our first state champion
in school history this year.
Yeah, she went undefeated, 22-0. As a matter of fact, she is nationally ranked. Rankings came out last week. She's ranked 24th in the country in her weight class, and which she's up two weights, by the way. She just wrestles up. But yeah, so we've got a state champ, a nationally ranked wrestler, and our team finished fifth out of every high school in the state of Georgia. It's not divided into classification, single A, double A. Every single school, we finished fifth in the state this year. So our girls'
good
team is really,
awesome.
Really taking off.
Is girls' wrestling different than boys' wrestling?
The rules are exactly the same in high school. The weight classes are different. Rules are the same. Practices are probably very similar. I know that when we started the program 2 years ago, I just decided, hey, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. And they went through the same practice that the guys did. And fortunately, this year we were able to hire Alan Newton. And about halfway through the season, he was like, man, I really could take a hold of this. And so they've, you know, he became the head girls coach and does a tremendous job with them. And it's something that is taking off. And I feel like we at Carrollton are kind of leading the charge on that. There's not a lot of local full high school girls teams.
That's awesome. That really is.
Yeah.
What do they wear?
So they still wear the required uniform, as Sporto calls it, in the Breakfast Club. If you guys remember the Breakfast Club, they made fun of them for wearing tights. Yeah. But they still wear the singlet, but it's a different cut. It's a little bit more high cut. But they can also wear the...
No nipple slips.
No. Not going to have any Janet Jackson moments. There's been times you worried for a little while, but no. No, fortunately, we've made it out of that. So
it's a singlet. There's no t-shirt under it or anything like that.
No, don't have... You can. That's an option if you want to wear a compression shirt or something like that, but they're in the required uniform and they get after it. They really do.
That's cool. I like that. I might like to. I think that's a sport I could get into.
Wrestling.
I'm just saying we have a lot of room at Carrollton.
Oh, my niece Riley's going to be a all beast. About it.
She's the youngest of those boys beating her up all the time. What about your involvement with FCA? Tell us about that.
So obviously, you guys being who you are, you're well aware of Jay Webb at this point in time, who's one of my closest friends and confidants. But, you know, obviously in high school, we had a smaller FCA when we went to school, and I was a part of that. But as I got into coaching early on, even at Mount Zion, you know, in my 20s, FCA was a prevalent part of life because I don't, it's hard to say this because I don't want people to misconstrue what I'm about to say in thinking that I'm not very competitive, because anybody that knows me knows that I will fight you for every square inch of anything. I will not lose to your 5-year-old kid at checkers on purpose just to make them feel good. Like that's who I am. But I don't coach for the winning and the losing. I coach because I feel like it is an absolute calling from my Lord and Savior to be around young people, whether it's in the classroom, whether it's on the wrestling mat, whether it was on the football field. That is a calling for me. And so FCA early on, knowing that it's a Christian organization, attracted me to the FCA. And so I've been involved with FCA on the huddle leaders, what you call your school representative side, for I don't know how long now. But as FCA began to grow and expand, and you know, as Jay has kind of taken over and done some things, it has continued to grow and is now a ministry that is I feel like they're really directed toward coaches now and pouring into coaches so that the coaches can, you know, in turn pour out to the young people. And so, you know, what they do, whether it's Jay Webb, Jeff Hughes, Mike Wall, these guys, they're there to empower and equip coaches to make sure that they are making that difference in a young person's life. There's a book, and I highly recommend, if anybody, I don't care if you're rec coaching, I don't care what you're doing, if you're involved in young people, there's a book out there called 3D Coaching. So it talks about the three dimensions of coaching, and to keep it simple, the first dimension is winning and losing, right? And everybody cares about wins and losses. You don't go out there to lose. If you go out there to lose, we can't hang out. We're not friends. You've got to have that. And so I think every coach that's ever gotten involved, or every, you know, mentor or whatever that's ever been involved in something like that, they want to win. The second dimension is whether or not you want this young person to be successful after they leave your program or leave your time, you know. So make sure that they're getting enrolled into a college or a skill set or a trade, and making sure that they're going to be good husbands and good wives and so on and so forth. And I think there are a few coaches, a good bit of coaches that I think truly do care about that aspect. And then that third dimension is, so what you're doing here is great, wins and losses. What you do for the rest of your life is important, but where are you going to spend eternity? Right. And I think we have to, if that's not the way that you're structuring what you're doing, you're backwards. Right. Wins are going to come because you're going to do all things as if you're doing them unto the Lord. You're going to be excellent in everything that you do, because that's what he says. You know, when parable of the talents, you know, when the guy that gets five makes it 10, and he gives them more. We're going to compete. We're going to do things at an excellent level. But the main idea is to make sure that you know where you're going to spend eternity, and not just for the whole heaven and hell factor, because that plays directly into what kind of husband are you going to be, what kind of father are you going to be, and so on and so forth. And so for me, being involved with FCA and those guys equipping us with those books and tools and resources, it really allows me to make sure that I maintain my focus and my, you know, the center that I need to maintain, and not get caught up in some of the things that are not as essential.
Yeah, I think that happens for all of us. You know, sometimes you get so bogged down in the day-to-day, the grind,
yes,
the tasks. You know, you're a busy guy. You got kids. We got kids. We're working. We're doing this. It's easy to kind of lose perspective sometimes. But coaches especially are in such an important position.
Yes, that's such a vulnerable age.
Yes, you can make or break. I mean, it is really and my husband can talk about this too. Right. It is a make or break. Like, you can really influence,
for sure,
a young person's future.
Well, like we were saying earlier,
in a very positive or very negative way.
That may be the only time they hear about the Lord or hear about God's word is that
time that they're with you or with that coach or that small amount of time, they may not get to go there on Sunday. So that's the time that they can get plugged in.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I teach the age that I teach, right? I couldn't handle the little ones. I'm not tough enough for that. So for all you elementary school teachers, congratulations, you're the real heroes. But I really do feel that time period around 13 to 18, that is such a time. That's a time where you and you said it, you can influence people positively or negatively. And you know, it's either the power of positive thinking or negative thinking.
Yeah.
This is the time period where if you come from a broken home, like I do, you start to question whether or not you're worthy of love because either your mother or father's not there. And something, you know, and so you start to question that part of your life. Or you start to question, you know, what you're going to do in the future. And you start to determine your self-worth, especially now. And this is one of the most disgusting things about our society. A lot of these young people are measuring their worth with social media.
True.
You know, how many hearts and likes and views and things of that nature that
filters.
We get. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, I can't even take a picture of myself because I don't like my skin.
Right.
Like, you know, if you ever went missing, we'd never find you because we don't have an actual picture of your face.
Correct.
You know,
you
don't look that way. So, I mean, I think it is such an influential time and age to where we do have the opportunity to help push these young people in a positive direction.
For sure.
And so, I don't know. That's really where I feel like I ended up being pushed. And I think a lot of it has to do with the things that happened when I was that age, right?
Yeah.
Like I went through some stuff and
did you have a coach in your life who was pouring into you?
I would have to say, you'd have to make it plural. You know, someone asked me the other day, who was your coach? And I'm like, man, it was several. There were several men that poured into my life in several different ways, you know. There was the tough love aspect that I got from my wrestling coach, you know. Who shall remain nameless, but we all know who he is. And you know, basically, you know, my parents had split up and they both left me, right? Like they both took off, one a little later than the other. And, you know, I'm kind of pouting, about to trip over my lip. And it was basically like, okay, well, are you going to man up and keep going or are you just going to sit there and cry? And that's what I needed at that point, right? I needed to do that. Otherwise, I would have. I would have moped around and blamed myself and blamed them. Didn't matter. We had a job to do. And so, obviously, he was very influential. You know, a man named Coach Reinhart, who was kind of like a friend to me. He was the younger coach for me at that time period. And then you got men that you feel like have never done anything wrong, even though you know that's not the case, you know, and a Coach Williams and a Coach Hodges, those guys that were just – constant and steady, you know, doing the right things. And so when you have that type of influence and you're poured into that much, you can't not pour back out.
That's awesome. You're in a really important position.
Well, I think, and again, I guess about what my wife says, I have the best job in the world. Like I have a great job because I get to be around young people that, you know, I guess I'll throw this out there. I was reading and listening to some interviews with Bobby Bowden and another coach that had coached for 50 years and he got in some trouble. So I won't throw that name in there. But anyways, they're asking him, they said, you guys have coached for 50 years. How have the kids changed? And the one coach starts rambling on and on and on. And Bobby Bowden says, the kids haven't changed at all. Parents have changed.
Yeah.
You know, kids still need love. Kids still need discipline. Kids still need these things. They're just not getting provided those things.
Yeah.
You know, I think the job of a coach and a teacher has changed over the last, you know, 20, 30, and 40 years because there are problems that are prevalent, but that's why we're here. You know, we're here for such a time as this. I used to be asked all the time. I'll ask you guys this because I feel like I'm doing all the talking here.
We're listening.
Yeah, I know, right?
You're pouring out good stuff.
if you guys could live in any time period, when would it be?
Oh,
yeah, I know.
That's hard.
That's a tough one.
I'm not going to lie. I'm going to say this for Erica, too. She didn't even have to say it. We like modern amenities. Like, I like air conditioning.
Yeah. Like, I'm not an organic kind of person. I'm not going to lie. I'm not real granola. I'd probably go back to the early 90s.
Ice is nice. I'm
fan
of ice. I'm 80s, not going to go too far back.
No.
The music and the cars of the 70s, 60s, 70s were good. I might go there. I might go 60s, 70s.
Go early 80s.
Well, yeah.
Good music.
I'm not. So I like the 80s are cool. Like be a teenager in the
80s. In the 80s.
But I mean, you know, my favorite time period is American Revolution.
You are a history major.
Right, but I love it, you know. And I people used to ask me,
hot in Georgia though. Yes, Lord.
With those outfits.
I ain't putting on.
Oh no, for you guys, no.
That's a hard Georgia, that's where I draw the line.
Keep your neck to your
ain't
ankles covered.
Bad enough. I ain't putting on a corset.
No. Well, I used to be asked this all the time, and then you know I'd wonder, and I would always daydream about this.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, like, this is the time. Like, we were meant to be here during this time period throughout this.
So, you know,
this,
around the election time, everybody's freaking out. What is the world coming to? All, you know, so many crazy things have happened. Like, even just like the Mr. Potato Head business, you know, like.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, who cares? I mean, whatever.
Of Satan.
You know, okay. So.
Did you know that Mr. Potato Head upside down kind of looks like Steve Harvey? I'm just saying.
But I read this great post. As much as I don't like social media, sometimes I do like some of the things you run across.
It can be very helpful.
Things you run across. But it was saying just that for generations, you know, like my grandparents worried about the times that they were going to grow up in. My grandparents worried about the times I was going to grow up in. We worry about the times that our children are going to be growing up. What are they going to have to face? Never, you know, oh Lord, world's never seen anything like this. Of course it hasn't. They were designed for such a time as this.
That's
God
it.
Put us all in the place we're supposed to be at the time we're supposed to be there, where we're supposed to be.
That's it.
And I think that's been one of my favorite things, talking about birthdays, about getting, as I continue to get older, and a birthday is kind of a time for reflection and just thinking about how God weaves that perfect little tapestry together, how people that, like you, I knew 100 years ago, come back into your life in some way, this way, that way, whatever, for some reason. You know, and there's just always a plan and a purpose for the way God weaves everything together, which is always so beautiful when you look back on it. So I don't worry about the times my kids are growing up in. They'll be fine. So you preach too, huh?
Yeah, I do a lot of stuff, actually. You know, I don't know that you would. Yeah, you definitely wouldn't call me a Renaissance man. But, you know, I feel like I wear a lot of hats.
Yeah,
for sure. And prior to the whole parents thing happening, I had a buddy of mine, Matt Siegel, and I didn't grow up in a Christian home, did not grow up around, you know, church and things like that. And Matt would always invite me over on Saturday nights on purpose because he knew I would have to get up and go to church with him on Sundays. And I would always find a way to not go because I didn't want to be in that environment. I enjoyed my life and I knew there was something there. I don't believe in atheists. They don't exist, right? When they're alone.
Everybody believes in something.
Yeah. When they're alone on their own and in their quiet time, they may not know what they believe, but they believe in something. And so, even at a young age, I knew there was something out there. But eventually, he kept chipping and wearing away. And eventually, I succumbed to the pressure that he would put on me. And, you know, I'd went to church with him a couple of times. But I ended up going to Victory Fellowship with him on a Sunday morning and white-knuckled the chairs, I felt like, the entire time. I just knew I didn't know what I needed to do. I knew that I just needed to get up and do something. I needed to move toward that altar area. And no one was in it. I had not been to church. It's not like this was something I had seen. I just knew I needed to get down there. And I did, and I just, on my own, started, you know, saying, I'm sorry. You know, like I just, and it's not like I was young. I was 16 years old, and it's not like that I had all this sin built up in my life, and not that it would matter, but I just knew that I needed our God. I needed a Savior, and I had some folks come down and pray with me, and so that's the day that I got saved, and that's the church that I got saved in. And for anybody that says that your life gets a lot easier after salvation, that is a liar. They have not lived a lot of life after salvation because it was literally about a month later when my home becomes dysfunctional and so on and so forth. But that allows me to have the testimony that I do so that when I am working with my young people, I can draw back and say, hey, man, I've been where you're at right now. Like, I've lived that life. And so, you know, that allowed me to have that testimony. And as I started with young people and coaching and teaching and doing character education, long story short, the guy that is the pastor of that place, about, 6 to 8 weeks into, quote unquote, maybe being homeless, he's like, man, you're coming to live with us. And I was like, no, I'm good. I got it. I'm set. You know, I can handle this on my own. And he's like, no, man, you don't understand. You don't have any authority in your life right now. And so I'm it. So get your stuff. And so I get to live with this guy and his family, and they teach me, you know, I get to see what a family is supposed to look like and how, you know, families are supposed to interact with one another. And I was able to be raised up in the last part of my teenage years in a home like that. And, you know, obviously the more time you spend with a guy like that, it rubs off. And so eventually it was one of those deals where it's like, hey man, I'm not going to be in town this week. You want to bring it? And I'm like, ooh, I don't know if this is, and it's absolutely, you know, we talk about callings, right? And here's the other thing. Like, I believe all of us are called to preach. Like, I know that this is going to, I'm going to challenge you a little bit. Matthew 28, right? The Great Commission. That's like the commandment of the New Testament. It says, go forth and make what?
Disciples.
Go forth and make disciples. So I ask you this, what is a disciple?
Webster's definition.
I don't care whose definition, but I'm going to give you Webster's in a minute.
Somebody who learns under or studies or follows another.
Yeah, most people talk about following and learning and studying, and that's all the things. It's a follower, a student, a teacher, a leader, or a philosopher. And so, like, if we're supposed to be disciples of Christ, like, we're all of those things. At some point in time, we need to teach one another. It doesn't mean that you're standing up in front of a church and teaching, but like, you're a teacher, you're a philosopher, you're at some point in time, you're supposed, that's what we're supposed to do. And so, but anyways, long story short, yeah, he owns his own business and has to travel a good bit. And so me and a couple of the other local guys that have had that calling in our life, we get to do a little teaching. And I try to never like take that lightly. Every Saturday night, I always get that pit in my stomach. Like, mm-hmm. man, like I can teach any of these parables and stories, but I need it to be the word and not a word, you know, for Sunday morning. But it's definitely
it's pressure when you're standing in front of everybody.
A little bit.
Well, you just don't want to mislead anybody. Yeah. You know, you want to make sure that it's.
You want to make
true.
Sure you say what you're supposed to say and not say what you're not supposed to say. And
it's true.
One thing that's helped me as a, I guess, a preacher recently is Bill Johnson from Bethel. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the worship out there, but the pastor is basically like, man, I don't even prepare for a sermon anymore. I just take my journal from the week and I break off that piece of my life, you know, and it's hopefully it kind of affects somebody. So that's kind of given me a little bit of freedom as far as not feeling so stressed to come up with scripted, you know, sermon. So to speak.
Better when it's unscripted anyway.
I think so too, when it's real.
Yeah.
When it's natural.
Yeah. What's the biggest challenge working with kids?
Ooh, I would say the biggest challenge working with kids is having to do so within the confines of whether it's of the legalities, so to speak.
And I'd say that's the public education system. And
right.
I think the world we live in today.
Yes. You know, cancel culture is a real thing.
On you.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the biggest thing is working through the legalities, because sometimes you know that a young person may need something, but your hands are a little bit tied to be that person. So it's important to have a community of people that can come in and be that guy. And again, that FCA allows us a lot of leeway and partnership with those guys to say, hey, look, this is what this person needs. I can't provide it for them. Can you guys have somebody do that? Or, you know, so on and so forth. But I'd say that's probably the biggest challenge because, again, kids are kids.
Yeah.
They need love. They need discipline. Some of them need one of those things more than others. But I would say that's probably the biggest thing is just kind of working within the confines and making sure that you're, you know, on the up and up and doing it right.
Yeah, for sure.
How's teaching been with COVID?
You know, fortunately for us, we've been face to face the whole year.
Yeah.
When we did the last semester of last year and it became all virtual, you know, I was a little bit more prepared, I guess, than some of my other teacher buddies or my colleagues, not necessarily the ones I work with, but the ones I know, because I'd kind of been implementing some digital stuff into the classroom. But that was difficult. That was because so much of teaching is not lecture. It's not. I mean, if we could do that, we could play a YouTube video and school would be irrelevant. And so, you know, being able to make those connections with folks.
Oh, for sure. Medicine's the same way.
Yes. Right.
Same way. You got to be able to touch people, see people, feel the energy in the room kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's not the same on a screen.
Yeah. Can't keep a kid awake when you can't touch him.
That's right.
Yeah. It's kind of difficult.
Yeah. So, when you can't stand over him.
Yeah. No, I'm hoping that we get rid of the whole... mask and social distancing soon so that we can go back to fully interacting with those guys. Because it is a difference. Now, I think we've done a great job, you know, moving on. I mean, there's several schools that have not even met at all since then. So
don't get me started on that.
Yeah, right. I mean, I know. So
kids need to be in school. Yes. They need that social interaction.
Well, and you guys can talk about this. I mean, you're talking about a young person that went from their life is about social interaction. And now they have zero. What the statistics are as far as, you know, young people entering into stages of depression.
It is like a 400% increase.
You'll get me on my soapbox. Yes, can't do it. But you're gonna get me on my soapbox over here.
It is awful.
They do not report on that stuff. You have to go looking for that data, and it is atrocious, and it is terrifying. Mm. And I'm here to tell y'all, people, I don't want anybody to think I'm being flippant about COVID, but there are things worse than dying.
Oh, absolutely. There are. There absolutely are.
And we are missing the mark.
What was that? You sent a journal article on rates of suicide.
Oh, yeah. Suicide rates up over 80%.
Mm.
in this country and around the world. No,
I mean, that. Not to mention the lack of social development, the lack of skills that they need to be developing. But literally, I guess I'm at a loss for the word. But as far as their physical and mental and spiritual well-being, it is being compromised. I mean, it absolutely, absolutely is.
We were, God did not make us to be alone. That's in Genesis chapter, what, 2?
Yeah.
We were not made to be alone. We are supposed to be with others. We're supposed to live in community.
Right.
We are supposed to be around other people. We just weren't designed that way. And it is not a virus or not.
Right.
You know?
This too shall pass.
It will. Or it may not. It may hang around. But how... You have to decide how you're going to deal with it. And we still should be out making disciples. And the doors of the church should be open.
Absolutely.
And students should be in school. And
absolutely,
life has to go on.
Yeah, we do. We have to push forward. You know, I mean,
in modern medicine, you know, we have to work hard.
Yeah.
And we have to find treatments and we have to be creative. But we have to keep living.
Yeah, and I think you guys know more about this than I do, but our bodies will catch up as well.
Oh, yeah.
Our bodies are going to develop those antibodies and immunities to things like this, just like we have over the last few hundred years. I mean, that's
I wish Christians would feel the pressure here because we can all talk about, oh, let's find a cure for cancer. Sure, let's find a cure for cancer. Oh, let's prevent heart disease. Let's do it. Let's prevent heart disease. Guess what? We all still going to die. We're all still going to be called home one day.
Right.
You ready?
Right.
I mean, if it's not, let's cure all the cancer. Okay, then there's something else, you know, and that is just how it is. And I'm not saying don't cure cancer. I mean, our enemy, I say this several times a week, you know, because we give bad news to families and to patients, and we're counseling end of life, and we're talking to families about bringing in hospice and all this kind of stuff. Death is not our enemy if you know where you're going when you die.
Right.
Suffering is our enemy.
Right.
So, church, where you at?
I agree. I completely agree.
Everybody's Step at up. Home on Sunday morning watching it virtually. No, I mean, sorry.
I mean, if you can head to Walmart.
Old soapbox
hey,
over
look,
here.
If you can head to Walmart and grab groceries, you can spend 30 minutes or 40 minutes or 2 hours inside the building. So.
Yep. Or sit in the yard. I mean, whatever, but be part of it. That's my rant for the day.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
I could talk for hours, but you know, I'm not making policy around here. I'm just trying to do the best I can.
In the words of Matt Skinner, do your best, let God do the rest.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Nick, we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you guys so much. I love what you guys are doing. Seriously, it's important to have believers in an elevated state in the field that you guys are working in. It's important to have that. So I appreciate you guys serving our community. It's one that we've all been a part of in some way, shape, form, or fashion, whether you've been here for 30 years or you're 5 years in, this is your community. So it's good to have, like I said, folks like you guys in the community doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
You too. We'll all just keep growing, infiltrating, making disciples, right?
That's it.
That's keep what we're trying to do. Awesome. Well, till next time, y'all, stay healthy.
Bye.